I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe David Lipsky. He's an author and journalist, and the new film, The End of the Tour, is based on his book, although of course you end up becoming yourself. It's a memoir about his relationship with author David Foster Wallace, which we're going to talk about in a moment. The film opens this weekend at the Violet Crown Cinema here in Santa Fe. The film stars Jason Segel as David Foster Wallace and Jesse Eisenberg as you, David Lipsky. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
It's great to be here, Marisha. Thank you for inviting me to the cafe.
So this is a film based on a road trip, which was the film is called The End of the Tour because it was the end of a book tour that David Foster Wallace did in the mid-90s when he was becoming a very major author. You were on assignment for Rolling Stone. How did Rolling Stone decide to send you to cover a writer when they don't usually cover authors?
Well, David was a very special writer, and we had all been following his first two books. And so, like the younger people at Rolling Stone, we kept going to Jan Wenner, who owns our magazine. We would say, write about this guy. He's great. He is telling us how we live now. He is making the world open. He's putting, he's finding words for how we all feel. And Jan was saying, yeah. But David is a kind of a, in almost every way, David was kind of different as a writer. Like, he doesn't look like a writer. And so we've been trying to get him in Rolling Stone for a long time. And then there was a review of him in the New York Times, and there was a photo, and David had long hair, and he had a little bit of a stubble, and he had a bandana that he wore on his head. And Jan saw the photo, and he said, ah, he's one of us.
Interesting. Having read his work, were you surprised, once you met him and spent time with him, by how he was, how he presented himself to you?
No, I was surprised in that he doesn't look the way you would imagine a writer. I have very traditional ideas for how writers would look. And there's a great scene in the movie when you go on book tour, you have escorts who drive you around and they take you to the radio stations. They would take you to the radio cafe and you would sit down in person with you, which would be wonderful. But in the film, the escort is played by Joan Cusack. And when she sees the way David looks, he doesn't look to her like an author either. And she looks at the way he's dressed. He's dressed as like kind of a cool person. And she says to him, you're wearing that? And Jason Segel in the movie responds, for a radio interview? Yes. He was big and he was incredibly cool. I mean, he wasn't, in a way it should have been what I expected, because he is the best writer of the last 30 years for talking about everything that we see and experience. And it would be important, I think, to be able to process that stuff. You'd have to be somebody who didn't look who kind of like the eyeglasses and tie and leather patches that we'd imagine for a writer. He was someone who looked the way the world looks now.
Now, watching this movie, it was just so interesting to see this relationship develop, and we can talk about how realistic that was or wasn't, but it really leads one to wonder whether there was a conflict for you when you were there over several days doing the interview with David Foster Wallace. Was there a conflict for you between your role as an interviewer whose editors had an agenda and you had an agenda and your being a fellow writer and a fellow human being with your subject?
No, it's a great question, but no, when you're writing about somebody, you know, when a magazine sends you, they have done this wonderful thing. They have paid for your airfare and they've gotten you into a room with somebody who, in the case of David, someone whose work you love. And so for me, it was just this amazing thing. Here is someone who I knew was the best writer writing. And I was being flown out to his house to sit in his house suddenly, this person who I'd been reading for 5 years. And I was in this great position. Mary Charlotte, do you ever read Catcher in the Rye, that Salinger book?
Yeah.
In the beginning of that book, Holden Caulfield, the narrator, he says, when you really love an author, you just kind of wish they were a friend of yours. You could call them on the phone and ask them about anything in the world. And, like, that was what it felt like. Suddenly, after having read him and having loved Infinite Jest and having loved his essays and having loved his first book of stories, A Girl with Curious Hair, to suddenly be in his house and to be able to talk to him and to see how he was living and then to be able to take a trip with him to find out, to see this incredible mind, to see it in action, to see it processing the world, that was just thrilling to me. So I was thrilled, and I was very happy to be in his company. And that was one of the great things about being able to write the book, was to give people a chance to spend time with this extraordinary, alive, incredibly funny, incredibly awake person.
At the same time, it seemed, and maybe this was over-dramatized in the film, I don't know, but that the magazine had an agenda to kind of get the dirt on him about things like whether he had been a drug addict and stuff like that.
No, that's interesting. It's part of how, it's what we all know from, it's what you know from talking to writers and talking to filmmakers and talking to people who make television. When there is a cultural product that we're trying to get people to be aware of, sort of, you know, the actual cultural product will be, in this case, it's David's great book, right? But how do you, for a magazine, how do you make the author alive so that people will read that stuff, but it's all kind of leading to them picking the book up and finding out about this great way of looking at the world, this great way of seeing. And so for the magazine, the idea is, okay, his story is a cool story. It's a thrilling story. Here's this young man who is fighting depression, who is facing depression, who, you know, we knew in New York, we knew that he had been hospitalized for depression. And so what my editor, who's played by Ron Livingston in the movie, Jesse Eisenberg's editor is saying is, look, I know that you love his writing, David, and I know that you love the book, but in terms of putting it in the magazine, you also have to make that story exciting. And in a way, that finding that balance of here is something wonderful, here is a wonderful person, but how do you get that across to the world? In a way, that's also part of what the movie is about.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, in my experience, a lot of movies about artists and writers are not that great. Some of them are mediocre, some of them are horrible. And I think that's partly because the act of doing your work, if you're an artist or a writer, is fundamentally undramatic. You go sit down and type. And yeah. Sometimes when people dramatize that in films, they just don't do it very well. And I felt like this one does a good job, both as drama and as a study of character. But I wondered if it felt authentic to you. Like, was it dramatized so that it would work as a movie?
Well, Mary, you just saw the movie. What did you think?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't in your shoes. I mean,
of course. No, but Mary Charlotte, to me it was different. Like I loved David Foster Wallace's work kind of long before I met him, and I loved it long after I met him too, right? But what the movie is about is what it's like to meet someone, to form a connection with them for a short time, and then to have that kind of connection end, but also to travel with someone who you know is giving you a new way of looking at the world. And that was what I wrote the book about, and that's what the movie is about too. The fact that he's a writer is obviously part of the movie, but it's more about those moments in our lives when you meet someone who is extraordinary and you get a sense of what it's like to be an extraordinary person and to take a journey with them.
And I think it's also so interesting because when you meet somebody like that in your role as the interviewer, you know them so much better than they know you. And so it's a fundamentally imbalanced relationship. And there's these moments where he kind of turns it around and starts asking you questions, or the actor plays you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's sort of like interesting what your character does and says and how he responds and whether you felt like, you know, this guy is kind of my pal as well as being my interview subject.
Yeah, that was just thrilling. I mean, to get to be traveling with somebody who you know is brilliant and to be traveling with someone who you know is incredibly alive and awake, it's kind of setting a standard that both you want to see how they're experiencing the world, and it also makes you kind of want to be more awake too. There's a great thing in an essay that David wrote that he published in our magazine that he published in Rolling Stone. He was writing about traveling on a political campaign, and he's writing about politics, and he's making that world alive in the way that David uniquely could make any world that he brought his writing eyes to alive. And he ends this brilliant essay just with four words: try to stay awake. And to be with someone who's that awake is an incredibly exciting thing. And it's one of the things that I love about the movie. The movie is about a person who's a writer, but it really is about being with a person who is awake to the world.
How did it, if it did, how did it change you to have met him and spent that time together?
It is. It's an invitation to. The reason that writing matters to us, David talks about it in the book, and he kind of gets at it in the movie too. What to be a person? You're walking and you're meeting people, right? But you also have 1,000, 100,000 impressions that you can't share, right? What he says is, he says this great thing early in the movie. Jason, who's great in the movie, says to Jesse Eisenberg, he says, "Look, here's the thing. Like I don't know even if I like you yet because I'm so nervous about whether or not you like me," which is, of course, the experience that we have at all times when we're meeting people, right? We want to be liked. And so we're not even deciding, hey, do I actually like this person? And what David says and what he loves about writing and what he loves about the kinds of things people make that make that real connection with another person, what they do is they allow you to leap over that wall of self, which I thought was a great way to put that. And that a person who could both experience that, find a way to say it, and find a way to make it live in your head and in other people's heads, that is part of what I keep thinking when I watch the movie is, here's this person who is showing you scene by scene a way to do that, to get over that wall that separates you from other people, and just to jump over that wall of self.
There was a part of the movie that I thought was so interesting where your character accuses him of being kind of, what would you say, falsely humble, of having kind of a false persona of a regular guy, and he vigorously denies it. What do you think about all of that now?
He said this great thing. He said that, and it's one of the things, after David died and I was reading through our time together when I was making the book, I could see that in a way he was talking to me and he was seeing things. Because he had great eyes, he was seeing things in my personality that he was suggesting in a very soft and kind way that I might want to change. And one of the things that he said, which was great, he said, "Look, I know that I'm a very smart person, and I know that I'm a very smart reader. But he said one of the ways I've gotten smarter is I realize that I'm not smarter than other people. And for he says that to look across the room, I think we were in a restaurant, and to think that person over there doesn't have as rich and fascinating and cool and well-perceived an inner life than I have, that makes me a less good writer." And he said this great thing about writing. He said that when a writer does her job right, what she does is she wakes the reader up to stuff that the reader's been aware of all along, and she helps the reader know stuff that the reader had been aware of, hadn't put into words themselves. And so that sense that everybody everybody you meet opens into a kind of beautiful and exciting universe, that was something that I didn't see as clearly until David and I had spent time together.
Yeah. We're talking to David Lipsky about his memoir, Although, of Course, You End Up Becoming Yourself, and about the movie based on that memoir, The End of the Tour, and about author David Foster Wallace, whom all this is about. Now, Wallace committed suicide in 2008. Did you revisit the tapes? Because of all this seems to be based on these audio tapes that you made during the time that you were spending time with him in the 90s. Did you revisit them in between the time you did the Rolling Stone piece and you wrote the memoir?
Yeah, I would every few years I would sit down and I would get to have that trip with David again. I'd never traveled with someone, had conversations with someone, eaten really terrible food with someone who was that awake, and I kind of loved going back into that time. And so after David died, when he died, it was on the radio, and I remember that my mom lives in New York where I live too, and she heard on the radio that he had died, and she got into a taxi cab and came up to my house to sit with me because she knew how upset I was going to be. And National Public Radio, all things considered, called me because I would always talk about things that David had said to me while we were traveling. He had said lovely stuff about what it is to be a writer, one of which was something that I pass on to my students at New York University. He said, "Look, it isn't so much how smart you can be in a conversation and one-on-one. That's not actually trying to be the smartest person in the room all the time." That's what he was getting at. Isn't isn't the job. It's actually saving that and bringing that to your keyboard. And what he said was that, you know, if you give me 24 hours alone in a room, I can be really, really smart. And he would talk about that thing that I had said about leaping over the wall itself, which I would tell people, or he would talk about what your job is as a writer, which is essentially to help the reader be aware of stuff that she's been aware of the entire time. I would talk about those things with people who I worked with at All Things Considered when I would do pieces for them. And so All Things Considered called me up and they said, look, when someone dies the way David died, there is this risk that people will go back to their work and instead of seeing all the colors, and David is uniquely alive to how the world feels now, but instead of seeing all those colors, they will just see the color gray. And what Alan Silva, who was producing the piece that we ended up doing at All Things Considered, said was, if people like you who knew what he was like, if they don't talk about what he was like, there's a chance that all that color in his work will just move down to that one darker color. And so that was one of the reasons I first talked about our time together on NPR. And then Rolling Stone called. I'd already said after he died that I didn't want to write about him. And they said, we heard you talking about him on the radio. You know, why did you do it? And I explained what my thinking was. And they said, look, he wrote two incredible pieces for us, and that really matters to us at the magazine. And so that's why I finally started writing about David. And then the piece came out. It won the award we have for magazine writing. It won the National Magazine Award. And then after that, I was thinking about a way of kind of expressing to people what he was like and giving them a chance to see not looking at a writer's life. These are things you were saying that you tend to see in movies about writers, like seeing him typing or seeing him reading and thoughtfully stroking his chin, but actually saying, hey, here is how a writer goes through 5 days in their life. And that was a great thing for me to think about, was how do I get across what this great person was like? And the best way actually was letting readers and then viewers take that trip with David Foster Wallace themselves.
Now, what was your role in the making of the film?
Forgive me, the movie, as you must have seen this morning, there's a great deal of smoking in the movie, so I am enacting that while we're talking too. My role was very simple. The director, James Consult, who's a brilliant director, the way he has described it when he talks about the film is that I was a ferocious advocate for David Foster Wallace. I really wanted that. As a writer, his writing is very precious to me as a reader. And so when they were talking about making a movie, the thing that was important to me was making sure that everything was right, that everything he was saying was stuff that he had really said. That the way he looked, that the way he moved, that the way Jason Segel performed him, that would be real. Because to give people a chance to spend time with this great writer, you wanted them to be spending time with the writer and not with someone's idea of what that writer was like.
Right. Did you work with Jason Segel at all, like, to act the character? I mean, did he consult with you at all?
What we did was, Jason was very, very eager to get those things right. So Jason would talk about what he should be reading. And we had all, you know, David's best novel is a novel, Infinite Jest. So Jason started a book club with three of his best friends in the town he lives in outside Los Angeles. And he said that when he went to buy the book, he went to the bookstore and he took Infinite Justice, this big 1,000-page book, and he brought it to the register and he put it on the counter. And the woman behind the counter said, ah, Infinite Jest, every man I've ever dated has an unread copy of that book on his shelf. I did the thing that to me was the kind of the most important thing. I gave Jason and James Ponsold copies of the audio of the times that David and I had been driving around and talking so that he would learn how David spoke, how quick he was, how alive he was, so that could become part of the performance.
What was it like to have somebody play you, Jesse Eisenberg in this case, and what was the process like of him internalizing who you are to play you?
When I wrote the book, I wrote it kind of as a fan. So my interest always in doing the book and then in reading the screenplay and talking to James Ponsoldt and Don Margulies, who's a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright, my interest was always in David being right, in getting in the way Jason was going to play David Wallace, getting that correct. When we were talking about who was going to play me, Jesse Eisenberg was someone I got very excited about because there's a movie he was in called The Squid and the Whale, which is about New York artists having a terrible breakup. He plays one of the kids, and that mirrored my own parents' breakup in some disturbing ways. And when friends of mine at Rolling Stone would see that movie, they would say, "Hey, I just saw a movie about you." So to me, it made a good deal of sense for Jesse to play me. The other thing that was very important to me about Jesse Eisenberg is that he's a writer. He writes humor pieces for The New Yorker. He's written two really well-received plays himself. And I thought it was really, really important that the person who is playing a writer who clearly is also a hard reader and who loves David Wallace's work, if it would be somebody who you could see in their face, someone who knows the value of words. So Jesse made a great deal of sense. He wanted to see what I was like, so he came and he met me. Mary Charlotte, you saw in the movie that we are in a lot of diners in the film.
Yeah,
so we met in the diner. It was method dining. We sat down, and the first thing he wanted to know before he agreed to be in the movie was he wanted to know that the time had mattered to me, and he wanted to know why I love David's work so much. Then he wanted to know how it feels to be interviewing somebody whose work you love, and the excitement of sitting down with somebody who you absolutely admire and who you also, in that way, we feel when we meet somebody we admire, that we want to in some way admire us a little bit too. And then after we talked about that, he wanted to know what it's like to be a reporter, you know what you do. One of the things that I told him is really important, particularly when you're a young journalist, is that if you're tape recording someone, if you're running audio kind of while they're talking, that when they say something really smart, the first thing you do before anything else is your eyes will zero in on that red light on the end of the tape recorder just to make sure it's running. So I said one way in the movie people will know that you like something that David said that you know it's brilliant is your eyes will go just to make sure the batteries haven't burned out. And then when we stood up after eating and we were walking our check over to the cash register, he looked at me and he said, "You are much taller than me. You're about the size of Jason, who's playing David Wallace. How can I play that?" And I said, no, that will work perfectly. Please don't worry, because as a writer, David Wallace was so much taller than everybody else that you being smaller actually will make sense to the audience while they're watching the movie.
Very interesting. What's it like for you to watch it when it's all done? I mean, is it like reliving that time together a little bit, or is it really something new and something different?
I felt extremely happy the first time I watched it. James and the production team, they kept saying, "We want you to see it in a theater. We want it to be the best experience for you. We've worked very hard on this." And I kept saying, "No, just send me away so I can watch it at home. That's fine." Because I kind of wanted to be watching it the way people will be watching movies, both after it's in the theater and then beyond. And so I didn't tell them, but I tried to watch it in the most intimate kind of way possible. I watched it on my phone.
Really?
Which was great. It was great to see. But beyond that, when the movie ends, you can see that Jesse, who's playing me, that he doesn't want to leave. And so for me, the reason that I first wrote about David and the reason that I wrote the book was that I wanted people to have a chance to spend time, to spend these 5 days with somebody who is totally charming and is in a certain way both very normal and also very, very extraordinary, and to have this enlivening trip. So for me, like, the first 5 or 10 minutes of the movie is Jesse doing the broadcast that we were talking about for NPR, and then Jesse sitting down with his girlfriend and saying, "I'm going to be doing a piece." You know, he goes to his editor and says, "Let me write about this writer. He's the best writer right now." And those things were fun to watch. But then the thing that really mattered to me was when he arrives in Illinois and when he shakes hands with David Wallace in the snow with his dogs outside his house, and when he steps back into that house, into David's house, because that was a house that I had never seen in the 17 years after I had gotten to spend that time with him. And it was great to be at the start of that trip and be able to take that trip again.
David Lipsky is author of the book, Although of Course You End Up Becoming Yourself. It is a memoir about David Foster Wallace, and it's the inspiration for the film The End of the Tour, which opens this weekend at the Violet Crown Cinema here in Santa Fe, starring Jason Segel and Jesse Eisenberg. David Lipsky, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
No, it was great. It was great sitting down with you, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having me.